Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is March 9th, 2021. And guess what? It's Holy WASDE Day. Right, Nicole?
Yes, it is. Oh, the most exciting day of the month.
Oh my gosh, you guys are, I mean, so in anticipation what you guys are about to tell me today. Today, listeners, I have Nicole Thomas, Vice President, McKinney Flavelle. Nicole.
Hey, hey, how's it going?
Kevin Combs, Vice President, McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, everybody.
And Eric Thornton, Commodity Specialist at McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Mike. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, welcome to our Holy WASDE podcast, Eric. You're going to cover wheat today.
Indeed. Indeed.
I'm looking forward to this. So,
how are you going to initiate them? You got to.
We should. A quick now that it's the 201 episode.
That's there right. There you go. Still getting hazed even after over a year, you know? Got to earn my licks.
Doesn't end. And I've been here 17 years and it still doesn't end. I still get
it. Right.
Well, Eric, we're going to shift over here. Might as well do something real quick on sports before we go into the WASDE. Who's going to win the NCAA March Madness? Just pick a team.
Ooh, you know, I really haven't followed that closely, but I'm going to go with Gonzaga this year. Oh. Why not?
Okay. All right.
That's my choice.
That's his pick. That's his pick. All right.
Strange year and a strong team. Very well.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't have any losses, so.
You look at a lot of the big dogs in that field and, you know, the Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, UCLA's of the world, et cetera, Kansas are all having off years. So this is definitely the year to go with a
go Zags.
Non-power conference team if you're going to choose a year to do it.
I'm with you. I'll go with Zags. Nicole, go with Zags.
I thought you said March Madness. I thought you were talking about getting a hold of some soybean oil. Because you're talking about basketball. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go with Kentucky. You do Kentucky? I have no idea how they're playing.
They're not going to make the field. They're under 500, so no.
Oh, no.
Because that's anyway. Kevin's team.
What about SLU, alma mater? Are they there?
Don't know.
All right, let's move on to corn.
Yeah, so anyway, on to things that I actually follow regularly.
And we'll start with you, Nicole, since we're talking about teams not making the March Madness bracket. Corn was mixed today. Not a lot happening according to the report, but tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, actually, corn was pretty dry. This was a really dry WASDE report for at least for corn and soybeans. And, you know, kind of counter to market expectations. We were looking for a reduction potentially to ending stocks, probably more so for soybeans than for corn. But they left corn unchanged. U.S. balance sheet still has ending stocks at 1.5 billion bushels. No adjustments to ethanol. We're kind of wondering about that, if we might see that number go down a little bit, but nothing there. And then globally, we actually saw an increase of about a million metric tons, which is very interesting because it appears that USDA is still at least above, you know, sort of the local forecasts for corn production in South America. Brazil's at 109 for USDA. And I think the February 11th, now this may have changed a little bit, but the February 11th, a report from CONAB put it at about 105. So there still may be an opportunity for some downward adjustment there. Obviously, with corn prices where they are, Brazilian farmers are going to try to plant as much corn as they possibly can. We're well past sort of the ideal window for planting. I think we're somewhere closer to like 50-55% of plantings compared to, you know, 80-85% normally during this time of year. And kind of the scary thing there is this means that crop will be going through the pollination period during what is typically one of the drier months in Brazil. So we won't see that come into play until late April, early May, probably more at this point, May, mid-May. So, you know, I guess the rationale there is that maybe the expansion of hectarage will offset at least to some degree, any potential yield degradation. And from a farmer's perspective, I mean, hey, why not? You know, give it a shot.
Yeah.
With prices where they're at, it's worth taking the risk. So, you know, other than that, like I said, pretty quiet scenario for corn.
Oh, but soybeans.
And soybean, you know.
Why are soybean oil going up?
That is the question of the, I would say the hour, but it's probably the day, the month, the marketing year.
Yeah.
And, you know, funny you should mention that. That is actually what you and I, sir, are going to talk about Friday in the podcast. We're going to really dig into what's going on with soy. So, you know, first of all, the market was expecting some additional reduction to ending stocks, U.S. ending stocks. Maybe something minimal, like 10 million bushels, but USDA actually left it unchanged at 120. And the reason why the market might be scratching its head about that number is because, you know, looking at the pace of crush, it appears that we're well positioned to be above this 2.2 billion bushels of usage that's currently on the balance sheet. And exports, I think we're at, as far as sales, like sales on the books for this year, we're at 98%. Of the current projection of 2.25 billion.
Wow.
Everything I just mentioned about what's going on in South America, with everything being late, that increases the likelihood that we see that export demand go further beyond sort of our peak period, traditionally peak period of export demand out of the US that usually wraps up around the end of March. And with some of these supplies coming on late and still some questions about, you know, just what that supply is going to be and what needs to be consumed domestically, et cetera, within some of those countries, you can make a case that we're going to see some exports, enough additional exports to push that number higher. Now, if there's one kind of what are we going to do here thing for ending stocks worth considering, it's imports. And like I said, we'll talk more about this on Friday, but bottom line is pretty tight and they're being reflected in the market now. And we've seen basis numbers go up considerably, overages the same, and even some apprehension to quote out of some of the soy processors. So I'm sure at this point they're evaluating their supplies, both, you know, what they hold directly as well as what may be held, you know, with the elevator stuff that they got on the books for delivery later this marketing year. But I'm having a hard time with, you know, us not seeing an additional reduction there. And then, you know, globally, kind of the same scenario. Now, granted, Brazil is supposed to have a pretty stellar crop for soybeans, at least relative to, you know, what they usually do, that we'll kind of see how all that plays out. But that number was actually raised in the WASD by a million metric tons to 134, which, you know, based on what sources within Brazil are saying, makes sense. They did take Argentina's number down by about 500,000 metric tons. So, you know, I feel like the revisions in the global soybean balance sheet are getting more in line with, you know, what the reality is. But like I said, the U.S. number is still a little bit of a head scratcher. So we'll see what we get there. And lastly, just to at least kind of touch on soybean oil a little bit in this podcast, the ending stocks number went up a little bit here with slightly higher beginning stocks. Category to watch there, biodiesel. And we'll talk more about this Friday as well, the whole renewable diesel trend and the influence that's having on the markets, because that's certainly going to be something to not just impact things today, but stuff to follow for years to come. So, but yeah, you know,
great.
It was kind of the report was, you know, you look for fireworks on WASD Day. I think we got a dud. I kind of feel like a kid, you know, you get that Whistler firework.
You lit it and it
and
didn't
it doesn't
do anything.
Do anything and you're hesitant to touch it because you're like, is it lit? I don't want to lose a finger.
Yeah.
Eh. Yeah. One of those days.
I gotcha. Okay, well, let's move over to Eric. Eric, talk to us about wheat. Looks like 2 months in a row, with no changes to that U.S. balance sheet. What did they do today?
Yeah, you said it, Mike. I mean, I wish I had more interesting news to talk about on my first USDA podcast. But like you mentioned, we're now 2 months in a row here with no changes. Ending stocks are staying at 836 million bushels. You know, there could have been some revisions downward potentially to that export number, just based on the fact that we've been lagging behind, especially so the last 6 weeks here for in terms of the physical shipments needed to hit that target. So while USDA didn't make any changes this month, we'll see in months to come if that number kind of gets trimmed downward a bit. But, you know, not a lot to talk about here domestically. There was a couple adjustments, though, in the individual wheat classes. We did see that hard red winter wheat stocks actually increased by 21 million bushels to 383 million, while virtually seeing a reduction of the same amount by 20 million bushels to white wheat, and a lot of that being categorized within the export category, specifically to China. So looking globally, that's kind of the major adjustments we saw there as well. We did see domestic feed consumption rise notably in the global balance sheet. And again, most of that coming from China. And considering where their current grain stock situation is with soybeans and corn, more wheat inventories were getting diverted to feed demand. So they had raised that category by 5.2 million metric tons. So, you know, another sizable increase to domestic disappearance there globally for the third or fourth month in a row. But we did see part of that offset by what was expected to be an upward revision to Australia as they continue to benefit from the effects of La Nina and getting great rainfall and a great recovery from the drought-stricken crop they had 2 years ago. So they are now revised upwards by 3 million metric tons to now a record output at 33 million metric tons. So a lot of wheat in Australia and a lot of exports coming for that country as we move forward here. But, you know, we didn't really see a lot of reaction in terms of pricing immediately after the report. You know, numbers have trickled up since then, but really non-event as it relates to wheat at this time. But moving forward, I think we just kind of keep our eye, obviously, at the end of the month for the acreage report. And we do know that what winter wheat acreage looks like based on seedlings last fall. But we'll see as we get closer to March 31st what some estimates are going into that report. And many of the sentiments across the industry believe that we'll see spring wheat acreage take a hit this year, just considering where the current prices are for corn and soy. So we could see some cannibalization there of spring wheat acres this year and potentially a tighter balance sheet for wheat in the fall. But not a lot to report today from WASDE. Like Nicole said, kind of a dud, really a non-event.
Okay. Well, Kevin, it's up to you to tell us whether anything exciting happened. And I think you're going to tell us a little bit about some increased domestic production estimates, you know, for sugar.
What I really appreciate is both Eric and Nicole said they had very little to say, and yet they still had a lot to say. I'm impressed.
You know, I can't ever say just a little.
You're up. He's just mad that you made fun of him about Kentucky.
It's a tough year to be a Kentucky fan, I'll tell you. But
so what'd they do on sugar, Kevin?
That's okay. Sugar was a little bit exciting anyway, for given March, we're, you know, basically halfway through the crop year and have good data for 4 months on demand. And USDA didn't disappoint. They really made some changes throughout all the categories on production. As you mentioned, they had a 62,000 ton increase, which wasn't really expecting to see a big increase on production. I thought there'd be some changes, but I thought there'd be some offsets. So we ended up with 47,000 tons on the beet crop. And, you know, just in some recent conversations with some of the producers, you know, they were kind of suggesting the number at last month was a little strong. So that was a bit of a surprise. USDA continues to cite very strong sugar recovery as the reasons for their increases. And, you know, it's not just in with one region. It's across the board, across all regions that they're seeing that excellent sugar recovery number. So we'll have to see how that number finalizes, but there is, you know, at least some people feeling that that may be a little bit strong. And anyway, our number, you know, we had been on a fiscal number. We were expecting that to be a little bit lower, but that's just taking into account the early harvest numbers that they'll be throwing in to get into there. And perhaps they're also using a little bit stronger number than us on the early harvest. So that obviously we won't get to figure out until October. On the cane side, production was increased a little bit as well. I think we had 16,000 tons, basically 18,000 coming from Louisiana, which was met our expectation, 2,000 tons lower in Texas. But they're holding firm on Florida at 2.2 million short tons raw value, which, again, we're expecting maybe that might be a little bit strong and are hearing in the trade, again, some feeling that that number could be a little overestimated, but we'll have to see as time goes on.
Great.
Demand also got lowered this month, 75,000 tons. So, you know, we're seeing some numbers, deliveries through the first 4 months are down 1.3%. This is a category we talked a lot about. It's really hard to really get a good handle on what happened because of the strong non-reporter imports last year, which led to very strong deliveries. USDA basically had to count that as a delivery because it came into the country, but yet it probably wasn't being consumed until the 2021 year. So I think let's, you know, wait and see how that shakes out. I think the USDA was probably wise to get ahead of the curve here a little bit and lowering numbers based on what we're seeing in those first 4 months. But we'll just have to see how all that settles out between the two crop years. So we'll see. But bringing that all into perspective, we end up with a stocks-to-use ratio of 15.1%. Again, we're expecting it to probably be somewhere in the mid-14 range, but again, weren't expecting that higher production number. So it looks like, you know, things are good supplies and will you know, help us transition in a great recovery after the force majeure event and horrible beet crop of 2020.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you, Eric. Before we let you go, we're going to have a Commitment of Traders webinar tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Nicole and Sean Bingham are going to be on that, right, Nicole?
Yes, that should be a good one. Everybody wants to know where the money's going, right?
That's right.
Yes.
And where can you register, Nicole?
You can go to our website, www.mckinneyfulvell.com.
Don't forget that hyphen.
And there you will find a link. Or if you're one of our lovely customers, you've probably already received that directly in your email.
My gosh.
If for some reason you have not, please reach out to contact us and we will make sure to get you registered appropriately.
Excellent. So we'll see everybody at the webinar tomorrow. If you want to register for our virtual spring seminar, Back to the Future, The Food Revolution Continues, on April 27th and 28th, go to mckinney-favell.com. Because you just registered for that webinar for tomorrow. You can also register for our seminar. Do it. It's going to be fun.
We've got one more coming up.
Uh-oh. What else
do
we have?
That's a big one, too.
Tell us.
Kevin and I will be talking about corn, soy oil, and sugar.
Oh, my gosh.
Right before the plantings report. Well, a week before the prospective plantings report.
I'll be on that one, too.
Can't miss that.
Gosh. Awesome.
Perfect timing.
Well, we're going to wrap it up. As I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every minute and moment with your friends and family. And until next time, which will be Friday, take care, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney-Favell's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favell.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.